Welcome to episode 69 of Extra Features. I'm Kevin.
I'm a mummified B-movie actress found in my house.
Hi.
Now I've been reanimated.
Hi, Matt. How are you?
I'm Deb.
I'm Karen.
I'll be your turn.
So how is everybody?
I feel great. Nice and warm in my cocoon.
And it's, let's see, it's finally spring. Just long enough.
Good, I suppose. Bob's eating an egg roll. He can't comment.
Yeah, he's got to be eating the plate.
Okay.
Show starts at a certain time. We don't like late people.
Is that why you showed up twice late last two episodes?
Use a mic when you talk.
No. So, Kev, seen any good movies?
So, Simon, I have seen quite a few good movies recently, yes. Have you?
No.
Wow. That's too bad.
As usual, I hate everything.
So, I just want to ask, who is in charge of compiling our list? Is it one individual that is compiling the list?
Well, I'm the one that sort of moves stuff up into the videos.
Okay.
Based on your feedback. So,
okay.
You know, so often that's why it's important to let me know what you've seen, so I know.
I will get better at that.
Okay. Because if a lot of people haven't seen the movie and it's on the list, I'll take it off and move it to a later show.
Okay.
So,
sort of like Hereafter because of Bob.
Right.
Got it.
Yes.
Yes, Simon?
Do I watch anything on the list, Kevin, or I just make up my own list?
Actually, Simon is so far ahead of the list. He's about 18 episodes ahead of the rest of us.
No, not for the next one.
He's already watched movies that haven't even come out yet. Is that correct?
I'm not much up to date. If it comes out on Friday, I've seen it within 2 weeks.
Okay.
Yeah. I have a question for you, Kevin.
Yes.
I hear in the States, they have this... I don't know what to say, admissions price or something, you buy a package for a year or something, and you can see as many movies as you want. It's like unlimited movies.
Well, that's a great idea.
We don't have that here, do we? I've never heard of it.
Not as far as I know, no.
Okay, because when that comes and my kids are in school, I'm getting one.
Is it at the theater?
At the theater. You can see unlimited movies for whatever X number.
What chain was putting it out?
I can't remember. It's in the States. That's all I know. It's not in Canada.
Okay.
So,
well, I mean, it used to be. I mean, I've heard stories that back in the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, actually right up through the 70s, they didn't clear theaters between shows.
I remember that.
So, like, you could actually just wander in for an early show and just, you know, if you were clever and could avoid the staff, you could just go and see as many movies as you wanted.
I have a question.
Okay.
Sorry, I was just wondering.
Can I just make a report?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, actually, you didn't have to avoid the staff. It was a lot. You could stay in the theater as long as you wanted. It was a pay one price admission, sort of like when you go to a convention, you pay to get in for the day, and you could come in. Well, you can't go in and out, but you could stay as long as you wanted to.
As well, I remember when I was young, back in a different decade. I'm not going to say which one.
I can help you.
No, it's okay. I know. I don't need the help. You know, the double features were more common as well. So it was a pay one admission, and you saw two movies with an admission break, or intermission rather, in between. Like, that was like a real common thing for Saturday afternoons, Sunday afternoons, as sort of the family outing.
I know that they still do that at drive-ins,
but drive-ins are few and far between now, too, at least in this end of the city.
They're pretty much a thing of the past.
Yeah. I read an article in the paper, I don't know if Deb read it.
Yeah.
And it just said, Art said how many drive-ins, and there was one in, like, nowhere near me.
Really? There's one close, well, not even close to me, but.
There was one in Oakville where I grew up, and it's apparently just, it's just become, just, it's the new hip thing to do. It's like after years of sort of existing, they have, like, they'll just have, like, triple bills of first-run movies, and they'll have just basically a flat carload price. So people will come and literally stay until 3 in the morning, because they just keep running the films.
Right. Interesting.
So are we going to progress?
We can.
I like this nostalgia, though. I like it.
Yeah, no, I mean...
Oh, I do remember.
There's a great website which actually runs through all the great movie houses in Toronto. I just can't remember the name. Debbie might remember.
Oh, I don't.
But all the different locations around the city of Toronto, where you can actually see the remnants of old movie theaters, like at the corner of Girard and Yonge Street, where there's a jewelry place.
Mm-hmm.
There's actually an awning, which used to belong to the movie theater, which was there. And it was a real grindhouse. They just showed movies repeatedly all day long, and they were those schlocky horror sex comedy things that went on. But
and there's also the big, is it Sonoma Williams or Pottery Barn, the one on University Avenue? That used to be a huge movie palace.
That's right.
The University Theater. And they, and that's what happened. Or even the Eglinton Theater just up the street from where we are here. I mean, that used to be my absolute favorite movie theater. And now they, because I guess it was too difficult to fit it out for
wheelchair accessibility.
Yes.
Like the Uptown.
Very much so.
Yeah.
Which was another fantastic
old theater.
Oh, yeah.
Tiny. No leg room, but still.
Well, and the York Theater, which is just east of Yonge Street,
mm-hmm.
the way that it was designed, you couldn't do wheelchairs. They couldn't install an elevator, so they just sold the property, and now it's a gym, like an exclusive club.
And then, most interesting of all, you've got the Pantages Theater, or it's actually the Cannon Theater now, but it started off as, it was built, I think, as a movie theater, and now it's been converted for
live theater.
Live theater. But it, I mean, I remember in the 80s when it was like a sixplex.
Okay. Well, why don't we get started on our movie reviews today?
We have movies?
We have. We have 10 movies. Well, actually 11 movies.
I thought we were discussing movie theaters.
Yeah.
Well, supposed to be watching movies?
Really? For extra features.
Oh, is that what I'm here for?
Yeah.
Oh.
Shocking.
Who gave me this list?
So the first movie on our list is The Adjustment Bureau, directed by George Nolfi, starring Matt Damon, Emily Blunt, Florence Castriner, Jon Stewart, Phyllis McBride, no relation, Natalie Carter, Chuck Scarborough, great name, Darnell Lenormand, Jennifer Ailey, and Gregory P. Hitchin, and somebody who did some catering. So, Debbie, why don't you start us off with The Adjustment Bureau?
All right. This is a movie that within the first hour, I had dubbed it The Brotherhood of the Traveling Hats. Because what does this movie tell you? It tells you that if you wear a hat, you can every door in New York City opens into a parallel universe. You okay?
I'm fine.
I'm fine. Dang, I want one of those hats.
Yeah, that's it.
And so this is one in a long tradition of movies where the concept of free will versus predetermination is played out thanks to the steely jaw and pea brain of Matt Damon and the absolute loveliness of Emily Blunt, beloved by us all from The Devil Wears Prada.
Romeo and Juliet.
Well, that's what I mean. I was just a great movie work. And that white-haired guy from Mad Men, John Slattery, as the sort of religious, sort of not representative of the titular bureau.
Why is his name not in the cast list there, Bob?
Can I actually point out another missing person from the cast list?
Please do.
Zod.
Before you start, this conversation came up this afternoon. Simon and I, every single time I do this list, if I forget someone, I'm always beamed for it. But if I give you too many names, then you say, who cares?
General Zod is not just any name.
Come on, Chuck Scarborough made the
Tell him
he was an usher on row 4 sweeping up, but he made the cast list. He was a walker.
Bob, why don't you give us your review?
Oh my gosh. From what I saw, because the theater I saw it at skipped some parts. So what I saw, I liked the interaction between Matt Damon and Emily Blunt. And I thought I saw, because he looks out his window, and I thought I saw, for some reason, CN Tower and the Soho Hotel downtown, but it obviously wasn't filmed in Toronto because they said it filmed in New York. So, but what I saw, I liked.
I see. I wanted to like the movie, but it's lacking in cohesiveness.
Also plausibility?
I found it interesting, the concept of, you know, your life being mapped out and, you know, that fate is the way you're going to go. Interesting, but it leaves no opening for happy little accidents that are, you know, along the way. So I wanted to like it, but it just didn't work for me. And then it just ended. Like, it felt like they were in a hurry to just wrap it up. So I didn't feel it really did wrap up everything. Yes, Simon?
I have a couple questions for our sturdiest panel here. If I get avoided, is that predetermined?
Maybe.
I'm just trying to figure that out the whole movie. I felt I had a Woody when I was looking at Emily Blunt, so I just wanted to know if that was predetermined. I was going to get a Woody when I looked at it.
You're pretty blunt.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say you can thank the wardrobe department for that, because Emily Blunt, I mean, it gets one of the coveted sexy professions. Her character is a dancer, and not just any dancer, a dancer on the brink of stardom. And you know what that means? Sexy outfits.
Yes, Simon, you have another question?
I think it was more on the brink of orgasm. Oh, my God, Emily Blunt's hot. Can I talk about this movie now? Because I think my Woody's subsided now from the Emily Blunt conversation. I think I've got it in my system.
We're all grateful for that. Go.
Well, you need some excitement in your life, Karen. Just take advantage of these things.
Oh, there's a lot of excitement. I just don't share it all with you.
Okay. You really want to get into this now?
No, I really don't.
Okay. I thought this movie was better than it should have been. I really thought Emily Blunt and Matt Damon proved to me they're good quality A-list actors. Like, I really enjoyed this. I mean, if I had to watch Cameron Diaz or Seth Rogen in these roles, I would probably just shot myself halfway through the movie for some excitement. So for me, this movie became more than an average movie. I mean, it was a very basic plot. I really didn't find it very interesting. I liked how the people couldn't hear over water, because that was about the only way they could give us any plot details.
No, I never thought of that.
Because, I mean, without that, I really don't think... I love the door thing, how they could open doors and you need a hat to open the door. That was kind of cool. And I like the whole inner workings. But I thought really came the God question kept coming up for me. Like, it didn't in the beginning, but as it went, I'm like, this is a God complex. I basically, I've heard this movie before. Like, it reminded me a lot of that Jim Carrey movie, and I can't think of it, where they...
Bruce Almighty?
Mm-hmm. No, you know the one, Kevin, where he's...
Truman Show?
Thank you, Truman Show. It was very similar. It just seemed like a new Truman Show with two people. But as opposed to the Jim Carrey one, I thought was okay, and Harris was basically playing Terrence Stamp's part.
Right.
I thought this was an improvement on that. Basically a remake of the same movie, just done it a little differently. Am I wrong?
And it's funny, it reminded me of something, and I couldn't for the life of me. I'm sorry I didn't raise my hand. Sorry, we have some new rules we're operating on. I'm sorry I didn't raise my hand. But it reminded me of something, and now you pinpointed what it was. I couldn't for the life of me think of what movie it was.
The one thing that I found a little troubling about this movie was the fact that Matt Damon is on the brink of becoming, like, a presidential candidate, and a good one, and Emily Blunt's character is on the verge of becoming a nationally famous dancer. And the idea is that you can be president, or you can be happy and find true love. Like, the idea being that you could not have both.
Well, Matt Damon could have his Woody, though, like I did for Emily Blunt. So, I mean, that was kind of obvious, though. So he was having happiness.
Isn't there more to life than just a Woody? If you were married to Emily Blunt, you could have many Woodies instead of just being a really depressed president of the United States.
True enough.
Or you could watch Toy Story.
Yes, Kevin.
So, basically, this movie is about God and his angels orchestrating everybody's life.
Yeah.
Right? So, there's a book of fate that dictates the paths that we are on. And the plan, we learn, changes on a regular basis. And somebody screwed up, and these two were supposed to be together, but the plan changed, and now they're not supposed to be together. And the fact that her influence would make him a bad president. Would make him a risky president instead of a, you know, a serious, thoughtful leader, apparently, because she's kind of loose and easygoing and friendly and so forth.
And hot.
Very. And so I liked Matt Damon. I liked Emily Blunt. I liked John Slattery. I liked the fellow that was more like his guardian angel.
Yes. The one who was supposed to spill coffee on him at 7:05.
Yes.
That was Morris Chestnut.
But
looks like
really
a bit more Chestnut.
This is all a lot. I mean, first off, if someone threatens me with brain damage for violating a rule, I'm pretty much not going to violate that rule. And if someone told me I was going to be president of the United States, if I didn't violate that rule, then I would probably not violate the rule. I would just go on with my life. The idea that this love at first sight overtrumps, you know, destiny seems kind of silly to me.
I think that's what I couldn't buy into. And the whole free choice. Because it took away that aspect, which is just such a inherent, I guess, ability, choice. You know, it's inherent in us to make choices. And to think that your choice is predicated on something else other than your choice.
I just think this is my argument, though. When we see a movie, though, don't we have to respect the boundaries of the movie? Like, in this world, they don't have freedom of choice. And they had to go get it. So
no,
don't we respect
actually,
that?
I'm going to...
Go ahead. No, absolutely. Go ahead.
I think that you have to... The movie works if you accept that this is our world and that there are these mysterious people behind closed doors directing our fate.
Well, I wasn't sure how I was supposed to take that, whether this was a parallel world to mine or my actual world now. So somebody telling me I should be doing a podcast now.
No. We have the right to choose certain things. But what they do, and they explain this very clearly in the film, is they adjust us.
Yes, because there's adjustment
rule.
Right?
They adjust the way that we think so that we will make the decision that they need us to make.
Right.
To make the plan work.
Okay. What is the plan? We haven't figured that out.
That's the thing, was if the plan keeps changing, how could it be a plan?
Exactly. They did state that.
Right.
Okay. I'm good.
It just seemed messy. It was an interesting concept, but it was a messy execution. But the acting in it is fine. General Zod is quite good.
No, I had no problems with the acting. It was well cast. I think I do, I buy that. But it needed a little more fleshing out, to use a term that Bob likes, to just maybe gel it together a little bit more for me.
Flushing would be more like it.
Okay.
Yeah. All right. So the next movie on our list is a movie called The Lincoln Lawyer, directed by Brad Furman, starring Matthew McConaughey, Marissa Tomei, William H. Macy, Ryan Phillippe, Josh Lucas, John Leguizamo, Michael Pena, Bob Gunton, Francis Fisher, Bryan Cranston, Trace Adkins, L. James, Michael Perry. Michael Perry, really? Anyway. Simon, why don't you start us off with the Lincoln Lawyer?
I fell asleep.
Yeah.
I was in the theater and I decided to have, my wife really wanted to see this, so we went to see it. And I fell asleep.
You paid to see a movie?
Yes, I did. I fell asleep. I woke up for about the end, and I thought the dialogue was really good for what I can remember of it.
So what was the attraction that your wife had for this movie?
She really loves courtroom dramas. Like, you put any medical show, any...
Lawyer show.
She'll watch it. She will watch it. See, I watched The Good Wife, and so I was kind of comparing this. I thought Matthew McConaughey did a fantastic job. I thought the dialogue was very good, but my biggest issue with it, I found it book dialogue, if that makes sense. I really could tell this was ripped out of a book. And if I had read the book, I think I would have gotten more out of it. But I felt they took the dialogue right from the book. They never changed it for movies.
Yeah, this movie kind of reminded me of The Firm and The Pelican Brief, which were similar movies ripped from books.
So what you're saying is that it's the John Grisham thing. Like, it's like this feels... It's not like they didn't do the work of adaptation properly.
I don't think they did any adaptation. I mean, maybe this is a better question for Karen, because she reads more books, or you, because you read more books, and Kevin, than I do. But I thought for weird that somebody that doesn't read a lot of books really felt like book dialogue. Like, I sat down and went, I felt like I was having an e-reader and it was talking to me. Like, those books on tape. Mm-hmm. And I enjoyed it. Like, I thought Matthew McConaughey did a great job. I thought the characters were fine. But it felt like somebody was, I was watching a picture book on TV. Like, it was not a movie to me. There was no depth to these people, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. They took the highlights from the book and put it right into the book and put it into my living room. Or put it into wherever, the movie theater, sorry.
It's an interesting comment, and it's actually not one I thought of. The book, I believe, is by Michael Connelly. And the lawyer that Matthew McConaughey played is one of his main characters and is featured in a series of books. So I didn't really pick up on that kind of comparison. And I don't believe Michael Connelly did have anything to do with the screenplay. I think he was happy to sell off the rights to his book, and the screenplay was written by someone else, if I'm not mistaken.
And so what you're getting at is that because the person who authored the books had no active part in the movie, which is they sort of cheaped out and just basically just grabbed big chunks of text.
That would probably seem to be the end result. I mean, I haven't read all of Michael Connelly's books to be able to make that absolute comparison.
And this is a continuing series. Like, this lawyer has different adventures.
Different adventures, different cases. I'm not sure how many books he's in, but there are a few.
All right. So in other words, this is a movie that if you were a fan of the series, you would get more out of than if you were just Joe Hugh moviegoer.
You know what? I think it stood alone. I think it stood very good as a standalone movie, and the character was well developed. You understood what kind of lawyer he was, the kinds of practice cases he had. You know, he dealt with the bikers and the drug dealers, and that's really how he. Yes.
I just liked how he got his money. Like, you're saying he dealt with this and that, but I thought the bikers were the coolest part of the movie.
Trace Atkins was a good biker.
Just liked how he kept getting money out of them. I need some more money, and he kept getting people out.
Fly someone in.
And I got to fly someone in. Who flying in? Nobody. And that was really good dialogue.
Yeah.
But I think if I read the book, it would come off exactly the same way, and that's what I'm getting at.
That's a really interesting comment, because, I mean...
Because
I
want to know.
I didn't get up on that.
Did you read this book?
No, which is interesting because, I mean, I'll be honest. I mean, like, I read all kinds of series, but I've never been able to get into books about lawyers because, you know, often it's just like, you know, every three pages it's like, oh, no, they could never do that. Oh, they could never do that. You know, and maybe that's my fault because I'm coming at it from a background where it's like, you've got to be kidding. It's the same reason why I can't watch lawyer TV shows. It's not that they're not good TV shows. It's just, wait a second.
Maybe you're not suspending your disbelief as much.
But it's like if somebody who was like a career Navy SEAL watched, you know, any given action movie, they'd be like, that's not how it is.
I just have a, you're saying good thing. I'm just comparing this. I think this would make it a better TV show. In an actual movie. Because I watched The Good Wife, and I tell you, man, The Good Wife is not for me. I do not watch lawyer shows, but it is phenomenally written. And I think this should have been on TV.
Actually, this movie does remind me, like, of a pilot for a television show, like a two-hour pilot.
Yeah,
that's like, right. Let's transplant Matthew McConaughey, star of A Time to Kill, into another lawyer vehicle, but he's a movie star, so it has to be a movie.
I'm with you 100%. That's what I'm trying to get at. So far, I'm just asking these questions.
Because the quirky moments, like with the bikers and with the driver and things like that, this to me seemed like it was building a supporting cast for a regular episodic show.
100% back and up. Yeah, I agree.
This movie could be followed up with an ABC show or something like that.
And I would watch it because I enjoyed these characters.
Right.
I just didn't like the way they spoke to me.
At times it would remind me of a show like The Mentalist, one that I really enjoy, mm-hmm. where there's a cast and they do certain things. Like, The Mentalist could be a movie, but it's also great television, right?
Well, I think it's also, you know, you're pointing, like, with an episodic program, you can have backgrounds into the personal lives mm-hmm. of the characters as well as, say, the main legal case that they're dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
But I will say, I still enjoyed this as a movie that stood on its own. I thought it was well done. I thought it had some neat twists in it, and I don't like a movie to be completely predictable. I like to be surprised, or at least be able to figure it out along the way and not have it figured out from 30 seconds into it that you actually knew what was going to happen. Bob?
I'd have to agree with you, Kim. I usually find, like, Matthew McConaughey's movies, are he's playing a sort of a smart-ass character. He's still playing a smart-ass character, but it works in this movie because he's playing a smart-ass lawyer. Well, maybe smart-ass isn't the right term, but it worked for him in this movie. And I like the interaction between him and the bikers and him and, what was his name?
William H. Macy?
Yeah. And there's a few, like, he did a really good job.
Now, of course, here's another interesting question, is that Matthew McConaughey himself, because obviously one of his first major starring roles was as a lawyer in A Time to Kill, which was, like, you know, John Grisham, sort of, you could say, who's the founder of, like, the contemporary legal thriller. And, well, Time to Kill was done 15 years ago. Did you guys feel that, like, Matthew McConaughey has grown as an actor since then, or is it basically, hey, there's that guy from Dazed and Confused with less hair?
That's a good question. I think he's developed. I mean, he's... I could probably say I've watched him brush his teeth, but that, at the same time, I think he's come... Yes?
Are we talking about Emily Blunt again?
No!
Oh, sorry.
Sorry, did you take another nap?
I did.
We're talking about everybody's favorite pot-smoking, naked bongo-playing actor, Matthew McConaughey.
No, I think he's come a ways. I think he's developed, yes.
Did you say you think he's come?
I think she did.
Well, I'm sorry, I've got...
At least twice.
Simon.
I actually think he's not progressed as an actor. I think he's basically showing on the same level of skill that he showed in A Time to Kill.
I have to agree with you 100%. And then when we look at movies like Sahara. And he couldn't act in that, and I haven't seen it in the room. I just think he finally found a vehicle that works for him. Because he can be that smart-ass Matthew McConaughey we've seen forever, and he found a character that works for him. So I would like to see it too, but I would like to see the writing a little bit, not so much TV dialogue, I guess, but is it? Okay.
I like the movie. I enjoyed it.
See, I
didn't love it.
2.5 from out of 5.
It was a little obvious that Ryan Phillippe was guilty. Oops, sorry.
No, it was pretty obvious.
Yeah.
No, see, I didn't think it was. Well, or not that he wasn't going to be, but... Sorry.
I think the word you're looking for is red herring.
Yeah, thank you.
There wasn't one. Just, yeah. He seemed to pick it out like that.
When you have a movie where someone is injured or hurt or something like that, you have to have a couple of people. You have to do the Scooby-Doo method, I guess, in some ways. You have to have people who are eligible as your villain.
Mm-hmm.
And this movie lacked eligible villains. Ryan Phillippe was too smarmy for his own good, so there must have been something going on. So having his mother part of the villain team just doesn't really, you know, it was an interesting twist, but not anyway.
Speaking of interesting twists, I think there's one in our next movie.
Oh, really? The Sucker Punch.
I felt sucker punched.
Oh, yeah. Someone got twisted for sure. Directed by Zack Snyder, the big follow-up to Watchmen. This movie starred Emily Browning, Vanessa Hudgens, Abby Cornish, Jenna Malone, Carla Gugino, Jamie Chung, John Hamm, Scott Glenn, Gerald Plunkett, Richard Citrone. So who wants to kick off Sucker Punch?
I think Bob should.
Bob, Sucker Punch.
Okay.
Sorry, I just asked Bob to do it because I want to hear Bob's comments because I think it's more of a Kevin and Simon, maybe Deb, because I'm starting to get to know Deb a little bit more as she's joined us. I want to hear Bob's opinion because I think he's the outsider to this genre. I don't think it's something Bob would normally have seen.
But what genre is it?
Science fiction.
But is it science fiction, though?
Go ahead. I want to hear what you have to say.
Okay, because you probably thought.
Did you understand this movie? That's the first.
By the end, I did. It's all happening in your mind, right?
More or less. Yes.
More or less.
Yes, it was.
Okay. I went into it like I thought. Okay, this isn't going to be a movie for me. But as I started watching it, I thought, this is getting pretty interesting. Like, I thought, okay. What?
Keep going.
Keep going.
Well, okay.
We're on.
Although it does happen in her mind, like, there's a point at which you thought, okay, you start believing that this is actually happening, but then by the end you realize that it's not, and it's all happened in her mind. But the thing is about this movie, when I started watching it, I started believing in the characters, and the only one I could really recognize as being who it was Carla Gugino as the doctor.
Was she a doctor?
In the...
She was like a dance instructor and something.
No, but in...
At
like,
the end of the movie, she was a doctor.
At the end of the movie, she was a doctor.
She was on the staff at the hospital.
She was on the staff. Okay. I started recognizing because I looked for Vanessa Hudgens because I read the article that she was in it, and I'm going, I can't find her.
Hold on. You looked for Vanessa Hudgens because you love High School Musical. Let's be honest here.
I'll admit I liked High School.
One,
musical,
two,
but that's
and
not
three.
Why I was looking for Vanessa Hudgens.
It was pretty obvious who she was. Curly hair, did Zac Efron. Pretty obvious.
Maybe he had a Woody.
Zac Efron?
You tell me.
He's just.
But okay, anyway. So you're looking for you're basically looking for comments as to if I actually enjoyed the movie or
yeah, I want to know your opinion because you're I got a pretty good idea what Kevin would think and Deb I'm never sure about, so I'm dying to find out. But I want to hear, did you like it?
I did. I was I don't know if the edge of the seat was there, but it caught my attention the entire movie.
I did it. I'm very shocked by that because I really thought you'd come out going, I hated this thing.
Did you get lost at any point?
For a bit, and then I found myself.
Oh, I think this movie.
There are movies that aren't within the actual Bond movie type that I will watch and enjoy.
Well, I agree, but I thought you would get lost because I think this movie allows you to get lost in it because it has a lot of problems with its transitions from scene to scene.
Because I've read a lot of the reviews that compared it to Inception, in the sense that like you just keep going deeper and deeper and deeper into this girl's head. But there's no framework like there is in Inception where they explain about, you know, the various drugs that will take you under and under and under.
Where do we go deeper in her head?
There isn't, sorry.
It's all on the same level. It never goes deeper.
It does, actually.
Where?
Okay, when she's first brought in, there's am I going to ruin anything by saying this?
We spoil the movies. Go ahead.
We spoil the movies. Okay, they're going to do a lobotomy, right? You see the little hammer and whatever coming at her, and it stops, and she starts thinking at another time, and then she's thinking that she's still in the ward, psychiatric ward. But then again, she starts going in like to war scenes. So there's more than two steps. It keeps going deeper. It does.
Kevin, fix album.
Right. So it doesn't necessarily go deeper, but it's a bizarre film in that she moves to an alternate reality in her head, basically, where the people, the other girls who are at the asylum are dancers in a club, all right, overseen by Carlo Gugino, and the orderly who's arranged for her to have a lobotomy is more or less acting like a pimp. He's pimping the girls out. And a big man is coming. Okay, so we don't know who the big man is. We learn later that it's the doctor that's going to do the lobotomy. Okay, John Hamm. So they're trying to get out to escape. So in order to do this, they found that whatever her name is, the lead character dances, everybody goes into a trance, and she is then elevated to another level in her own head, where things go on. Like she fights dragons, or she fights giant samurai, or she's in a World War II analogy where Nazis are zombies, the undead that brought back to life, and the other girls who are there, these things are going on. So what's going on in this alternate reality, this another level, and you're right, it is sort of like other levels, right? Something has happened in the real reality in her head where they're trying to break out of the prison. Or whatever that is.
The
asylum? It's sort of like the asylum, but it's not quite. Anyway, and, you know, one girl dies and her room in the asylum is torched. So, you know, we don't know exactly how she died. We know that she died in a train crash in another reality. But that influenced our reality, or the reality of the film. It just, it's labyrinthine, and it makes no sense, and it's awful. This really is an awful movie. You have to just go in looking to enjoy some interesting visuals.
Speaking of the point, that's exactly what I felt about it. That's why I wanted to ask Bob. I thought this movie was a big pile of crap. I thought the transition scenes didn't make any sense to me. And it never made any sense what was going on. It was like the same dance routine we're watching with a different okay, I got that the first time. I have to steal something. I have to get something. What's the point in the end if she just gets a lobotomy? Like, why did we go through all this process for a lobotomy? Because then I was hoping maybe the whole thing at the beginning triggered this and somehow would have redemption at the end. No. There's no point to this. The transition scenes keep... Okay, I get what transition. She goes back to the club. The guy's going to get her, and they show you. And then I got to the end, I'm like, oh, really? She does have the lobotomy? So there's no redemption for this character.
She does it so that another character can escape.
Yes.
The asylum.
Yes. Jenna Malone dies.
Yeah, her sister.
Yes.
Jenna Malone's sister in
the
movie.
Oh. I don't know the actress's name. I will. Abby Cornish.
Okay, so I have another question. Having not seen this movie yet.
Don't.
Okay, because there was such hype about it. Like, it was on the cover of a ton of magazines. It was reviewed heavily. There was so much pre-talk of this movie. So did it fail on that level? It didn't live up to the expectations that people had for it.
I was going to say this because coming out of Comic-Con last year in San Diego, like, I mean, this was... the movie that all the sites were talking about. This was the movie where, you know, the trailer was the one that creating all the buzz. When you went into movie theaters months before it came out, there were giant standee figures of all the characters. And then within a week of the opening day, it was like it never existed. It was like it had never existed. They could not get it out of the theaters fast enough.
Now, was it based, because I'm not as familiar with the genre as all of you, it was a graphic novel?
No.
No? Was it based on anything?
No.
So this concept just came out of nowhere for a movie?
Well, Snyder found a script that he liked. I'm not sure if he wrote this or not. I'm sure he had some input. Actually, they do claim that there are comic roots to this.
Okay.
But I've never heard of it.
Being an outsider, I don't know where I got that idea, but it clearly... seemed that way to me.
Yeah, I was going to say, I do have a question, though. I mean, we've seen a lot of Zack Snyder movies now. Are we afraid of what he's going to do to Superman now?
A little.
Because I have not liked one Zack Snyder. I didn't like Watchmen.
Oh, I liked Watchmen. I thought it was a very decent, especially the longer version.
I've only seen the short version, and I don't want to see another version.
I like 300.
Again, 300's a video game. It looks like a video game.
And I like Dawn of the Dead.
Which I've yet to see. It's the only one I've not seen of his.
And of course, so the question is, does this mean that we're doomed to have a go-go dancing Superman?
Well, that's the question I'm asking. Are we worried? Because I am. I don't like Superman. I really don't. And
are
I don't.
In the comics?
No, I'm not a Superman fan. I'm a huge Batman fan. Couldn't care less if they ever made a Superman movie. But I'm such a big Christopher Reeve fan and the original Superman, I can enjoy this. I love the Superman cartoon. And I love the Superman Adventure comic. Because they were one-offs. There was no history involved. And Mark Miller did a great job. I'm just so worried about this. I'm just like, I don't want to see another bad Superman movie because I think it's done then. And like, I have the same problem. I've seen one trailer for Green Lantern and I'm like, I don't want to see another one. I'm so afraid Green Lantern's going to suck that bad that I'm just going to hate Green Lantern.
Well, I'm the opposite. I think every trailer they've improved on is the biggest one.
I've only seen the first one.
The latest trailer is all about the core and the universe. It looks great.
Tomar Ray, not Mary.
Okay. We'll get there when we get there.
No, but I mean, but the last trailer is actually really considerate marketing, because you've got a character telling the history of the Green Lantern Corps and what is happening to the Hal Jordan character. So even if you've never heard of Green Lantern, never read a comic, you'll be ready to go into the world of the movie.
Okay, we'll see. Bob, open the vault. Sorry, go ahead.
You're not letting me say anything about Green Lantern?
No, finish up.
I'm actually looking forward to seeing the Green Lantern movie based on the trailers that I have seen.
No, I will buy Sucker Punch to see in a better screen in high definition, because the copy I saw was okay.
The same with me. I want to see it, like, I want to rent, I want to
but
rent it.
The movie itself is a failure, in my opinion. It's just not.
I disagree.
I say pass. Okay, are we ready to open the vault, Bob?
Screech! Oh!
Oh my god, this vault has Muppets!
Yay! I'm about to get killed in the show, am I not?
Has anybody seen the new Green with Envy trailer?
Yes! No, I haven't!
It is awesome. It's got, who's your favorite? Amy Adams. And Jason Segel are in a romantic comedy where they go to Los Angeles to celebrate their anniversary. And it starts playing out like a traditional trailer. And then they start saying, Amy Adams, Jason Segel, Kermit the Frog, Miss Piggy. And then Jason Segel is in this room and he goes, wait a minute. Do you mean to tell me this movie has Muppets in it?
Oh, I have to look for that when I get home.
And then it becomes a trailer for The Muppets, which is the movie that's coming out in the fall.
In November.
Yeah.
Yay!
Great trailer. Really.
Excellent.
Really great trailer.
Karen.
Oh, I saw
yes, Simon.
Why don't you discuss Muppets Christmas Carol for us today?
Muppets Christmas Carol. Yes, everyone, I know it's only May, but we're going to talk about Christmas. This movie, directed by Brian Henson, starring Michael Caine, Meredith Braun, Russell Martin, Theo Sanders, Steve McIntosh, Robin Weaver, and the voices of Frank Oz, Dave Gold, Jessica Fox, Steve Whitmire, and Donald Austin.
Oh, this is a movie to take to your heart.
Well, for those who should be familiar with the story of A Christmas Carol, it does take the Charles Dickens story.
And Muppetizes it.
And Muppetize, is that a verb?
It is now.
We're going to make it a verb. So Michael Caine is playing Scrooge himself.
But I think even before we get into the estimable work of Sir Michael, we need to talk about Gonzo and Rizzo
the Rat.
Yes, because what I love about this movie is that it acknowledges that not everybody knows the plot. So Gonzo gets to play Charles Dickens.
Yes, okay.
And there are some brilliant fourth wall moments with that.
And the chickens.
Of course.
Gotta have the chickens. For those not familiar with the Charles Dickens story, Ebenezer Scrooge is a miserly old bah humbug who is not a fan of Christmas and festivities and fun in general. He has an employee at his accounting firm, Bob Cratchit, who wants Christmas Day off to spend with his family.
In the bosom of his family.
So that precipitates bringing on the idea of Christmas.
Yes, with absolutely, and you just know what you're in for with the appearance of the ghost. Well, traditionally the ghost of Jacob Marley is but one ghost. This
yes.
one's got two.
Yes.
Statler and Waldorf. Yes.
Sorry, it just brings a little chuckle to me.
Well, because you gotta love it when the ghost, the character that's supposed to traditionally scare the crap out of the viewer, they can't stop heckling long enough to, like, fulfill their narrative purpose in the plot.
And I love how, you know, when you watch The Muppets as a kid.
The Muppet Show was probably one of the smartest programs on television in the 70s.
It really was. You know, Friday, 7 p.m., I was in front of the TV. It was the great concept of a variety show. Yes.
I just want to say times haven't changed. That 7 o'clock on a Friday, you're watching TV normally.
No.
What?
No, probably in the dog park. Let's not go there, Kevin.
So, Bob, what did you think of the movie? I mean, we really worked hard on it. Piggy was really she was into the part, I must say. And, I really thought Michael Caine kind of.
It is an easy being green.
Excuse me, for which talking?
Show some respect, man.
I mean, really, I think this movie is a testament to my career as a movie star. I mean, I've worked hard. I've gotten here. I mean, I survived the death of the guy that originally spoke for me. And, you know. There's not really much more to add about that. It's Christmas. I mean, everybody feels good.
Kirby!
Kirby, Piggy, whatever your name is, move along.
I liked it. How about that? Christmas Carol is a good movie. This was another take on it. So
God bless Michael Caine for playing the whole thing straighter than straight. That man can act. And there's music in the movie, too. I mean, like, they integrated the music so well into the plot.
Did you say music?
I'm actually very happy he played straight, because Michael Caine playing great gay is a little bit much. You know, he's a little over the top.
Oh, I think we lost Bob on that one.
Okay. Can I say something, because I'm going to get killed here? I hated this movie.
What? Blasphemer?
I thought it was boring, dull, and uninteresting at any time. Except for Waldorf and the other guy.
Statler
were great. I couldn't care less about Gonzo. Blow him up. Or yeah, where's that boomerang guy to blow a board out of my skull? The musical numbers were dull. The dialogue was flat.
Did the children watch this with you?
And they never need to watch it again. No, they didn't see it. Okay. They asked me. They saw a bit of it.
Karen, yes. I think somebody here hates Joy.
Maybe he is Scrooge.
Right, you see the way I look at it. This
way. Listen, Kermit, you know my point.
I have to do one contractual obligation film every so often so that I can make an art film. and it really improves on, like, this one was really, I mean, everybody knows Christmas Carol. Everybody tries that at the end of the year. I mean, this was my, it was my testament to
Kermit,
to
I have a question for you.
Yeah.
How come Gonzo and the Rat are buddies now?
Well, they spent some time together in Switzerland. And while they were there, they really got to know each other well. Because
that's not what I heard.
What did you hear?
I heard that the writers thought they worked well at Muppets in Space together as a duo.
Really?
So yeah. They thought they would make a project for them.
My mind is a little... Which one came first? Was it Muppets in Space or this one? Karen?
Muppets in Space.
Oh. That was the classic. Gonzo's an alien.
Where was Scooter?
Scooter's back at the theater, man.
I fired Scooter years ago. The boy just says keep coming back into work every day. I don't know why.
I love that guy.
Is it Uncle Owens the theater?
Yeah.
So, Kermit.
I was just going to ask Simon, does this mean... every Muppet movie is going to be...
Oh, we're doing them all.
Oh, well, thank God, because I don't have a problem with them, but you obviously have a Muppet problem.
No, I thought... No, we'll wait. We'll keep going. We have to discuss another Muppet movie tonight.
Rainbows are visions. Not just illusions.
Have you noticed the people that spend a lot of time at home know the words to the song?
I don't. And that was a rainbow connection.
Right.
And actually, being green.
Yes.
You know, whether or not you're a Green Lantern or Kermit, you know, Hal Jordan winds up flipping. We were discussing the many lives of Hal Jordan last night. And let's see. The guy's been dead more times than Elizabeth Taylor's career, so, well, seriously.
Oh, I was going to say somebody's sex life. Let's that one go.
Well, wait a minute. Is some Elizabeth Taylor dead?
She is.
Well, I said her career.
But it definitely is.
Well, it's dead now.
So can we move on to Muppets in Space?
Well, yeah. I must say that's a very nice shade of green in there.
Kermit, what did you think of Muppets in Space?
Hey, hello, Simon. I really liked it. I thought, I mean, I wasn't in it as much as I could have been, but I thought that Gonzo, and particularly Pepe the Crab, or whatever he is.
He's a prawn.
He's a prawn.
He's a prawn.
We're all prawns, baby.
I thought he was a sandwich.
Sorry.
Was he a sandwich?
Kevin, are you a prawn in the game of life?
Well, I don't know where Kevin is right now, but I don't know where this guy is.
It's a question I'm increasingly asking.
Oh.
Yeah,
so,
that was
Kermit,
that
did
was
you lie?
That Kevin guy was here. He'd be wincing right now. I mean,
and it is so wonderful that he's not.
Bob, Muppets in Space, anybody, or just waiting for me?
Love it. I figured I had to say it. I mean, look where Frank Oz went. You see, Yoda! Actually, that was not a good Yoda.
Well,
oh, you
were seeing
Yoda, and then you went on to Muppet. Oh,
yeah. Oh, they went to India. Isn't Yoda going to India? You want some Yoda?
You see.
What was good about this movie? Somebody give it to me. I missed the point. I thought it was better than Muppet's Christmas Carol.
You
was.
Oh, yeah. Much better.
Okay, well, I haven't seen this in a very long time because I mistakenly was not aware that it was on show tonight.
Well, it was on 7 at 7 o'clock on Friday with your non-wheel.
No, that was the Muppet Show.
That's a dog bark.
Well, that's where she meets all the hot guys.
You know it.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. My dog attracts them.
No, no.
Yeah, there we go.
Good name for your dog, too.
Yeah, moving on.
You know why you named it that.
Moving right along.
Okay, can I discuss Muppets in Space? Like, I thought this was a better movie than Muppets Christmas Carol. I'll fully give it a much better script, because I really don't need this Christmas Carol again as long as I live. But why was Kathy Griffin in this movie? Or Putty from Seinfeld? Well, who
Deborah
is in this movie? I didn't have a list of movies.
Do you remember the Batman TV show when they used to walk up the wall?
Yes, that's exactly what this reminded me of.
That's kind of like, we kind of throw them a bone. Because, you know, these people want to be in Muppet movies.
They need work.
You know, really,
they need work, Kermit.
It's an exclusive club.
They need
to be
work,
in Muppet movies. Okay. I mean, Jeffrey Tambor really was awesome in this film, I thought.
He was decent. He was one of the ones I liked in the whole movie.
The CIA bear.
CIA bear is the best.
Yeah.
The CIA bear show was on the show.
You know, that guy, I can tell you, he doesn't shit in the woods.
Yeah, I would definitely recommend Muppet in Space over the other one. I thought Wade's Muppet in Space was not as boring as Christmas Carol. They didn't have dance numbers I could fall asleep during. What?
Nothing.
Can you get a stupid look at it?
No, you'll know when I'm giving you the stupid look.
Go ahead.
He's hiding under the table.
Oh, he's in the puddle in the rain.
Yeah. He's with the lovers and the dreamers.
Orson, go get him.
Actually, you know what? Muppet Christmas Carol was okay.
Awful.
But Muppet in Space was inspired. It was really, the dialogue was fantastic. I love the dialogue in this movie. It was a lot of fun.
No, it's the CIA bear. It's not all about it.
But also, I think Ratso, Rizzo or whatever the rat, is great.
Oh, when Jason Bateman has him and they do the kind of like a sing-along in the when they're doing this. He's trying to figure out what cheese to grab. And he goes first one, he grabs the one, he doesn't get hit, he gets punched.
Yeah.
And then he goes the other way and he gets punched again. That was funny.
Yeah.
And then he has to escape. I really enjoyed Bobby.
And this movie, I mean, Pepe the Prawn was added later into the, he wasn't on the show.
No, but that was fine.
But he shines in this movie. He is really a fantastic character.
I thought it was great. No, I enjoyed Muppets in Space. Yes?
Nothing.
Oh, that's it? We can move on?
No,
have you seen this one?
Oh, my God. Deb has not seen the movie?
Sorry, I don't have a new list to make, Bob.
New list for Deb. Put Muppets in Space on Deb's list.
But I mean, the fact is, though, is that, like, I just never had the chance to go see this in the theater, and I really want to see it. I mean, because, let's face it, it focuses...
There you go.
Catch.
Now you can see it.
All right, so we're going to add some other Muppet movies as we go along.
We did do the Muppet movie, did we not?
We've never done the Muppet movie, the Great Cape,
Muppet Cape Manhattan.
So we have three.
And Treasure Island.
Muppets Take Berlin.
Then we take Berlin.
We did it by Leonard Cohen.
Can somebody tell me why that song was ever made?
That's another show.
That is a horrible song.
All right. Well,
that and Martha and the Muffins.
Echo Beach.
Let's
move on.
Sorry, I just
Roman got, Bath.
I heard.
I joined Laurence Olivier and Tony Curtis.
Gene Simmons,
Kirk Douglas,
Peter Ustinov,
Kirk Douglas is Chin,
Charles Laughton,
and Herbert Long,
John Dahl, he liked Indian bread,
Nina Frosch,
John White,
Tony Curtis, give me a break and make it
today. Directed by Stanley Kubrick.
Yeah, you know what? I have to say this is the only Kubrick movie I love.
Spartacus.
And he disowns this movie. He says it's not his movie. He really doesn't like this movie because it's a studio picture. It's not a Kubrick picture.
He feels that even the directors were higher on this.
Yes, exactly. And it was a Kirk Douglas project. Kirk Douglas said, "I want you to make it this way. I want you to film it this way. This is what we're doing."
I think this movie in part grew out of the fact that Kirk Douglas was not cast as Ben-Hur.
Yeah.
But it was one of those things where a movie star's kind of peak actually results in an entirely new and different kind of movie being made.
Yes, 100% on board with it.
I mean, the first time I saw this movie, I was amazed how dark it was. No tack on happy endings for this Gladiator.
I think this is a phenomenal movie. I haven't seen it in a little while. Kevin put it on the list, and I said, I can't rewatch it. I just have too much on my plate right now because I had another three out of the 3-hour movies you guys gave me to watch. So. I saw it a long time ago and loved it. I just loved the arena scene when he throws the spear at the guy. The way they filmed that shot, I thought it was excellent. I am Spartacus. I believe them. 100% on board. Kevin, you've watched this recently. Oh, phone call.
Just a moment.
Maybe it's for permit.
I guess I should pause. That communist sympathizer thing that you had to go up and say you weren't a communist and recommend. So they call me up and say, okay, Simon, who
name
do you
names.
Name a name. Bob's a communist, so is Kevin. Okay, have a good day. We'll charge you now. Like Peter Lorre is a communist.
Well, people,
really?
People were driven to suicide by the blacklist, and I think
that is ridiculous.
And I think this movie has a special place because it marks the first time that somebody who had not been allowed to work under their own name for the previous 10 years was allowed to come back and claim credit for a script.
Which is good. This is a great script.
Oh, yeah. And like, considering that this movie was made in 1960, like, it's tougher than this type of movie would have been, even if it had been made, like, 2 or 3 years previously. There is something different in its tone.
Yeah, I don't think we've seen movies like this until, actually, maybe Gladiator, I guess. I've just because both Gladiator movies, but movies very similar to this. We don't see until Gladiator, I think.
Very nice segue.
I know. I thought it was good.
Want to be free.
Like,
Kirk Douglas.
I love Kirk Douglas.
Spartacus. Every word of Spartacus. I forgot to take a big breath.
Okay, Bob.
I'm manly.
Okay. We're doing Gladiator?
No, we're still doing Spartacus.
Oh, are we?
I like Spartacus.
Oh, I thought you were done.
I enjoyed it. It was a lot of fun. It was, you know, especially when all the guys died at the end.
That was really cool.
Yeah. Because, you know, they all wanted to be Spartacus.
That's right.
So they all wound up.
Good.
Yes. On the Tree of Woke with Conan.
Great movie.
Yeah. Good stuff. Anyway.
Okay. Off to Gladiator.
Right. Gladiator. Bob, you just saw this, did you? No. Even though I gave you the movie.
Well, I saw it.
3 hours long.
It's 2:45.
3 hours of awesomeness. And you gave it back to me. You're going to take it home. You're still going to watch it.
You're still going to watch this, guy. Bob?
Yes.
I don't mean to be rude. People that listen to the show or know me well. I do not give 5 stars out very rarely. This is 5. 100% a 5-star movie on my top 100 movies of all times. And I'm not joking, Bob. I only have the minorest complaint. This movie is perfect.
Except.
I have one. And it's such a tiny nitpick. And I want people's opinion. It's near the end of the movie. And he's got the deal with the queen to escape. And I felt that scene was just rushed. Like, he seems like, it's just like, boom, they're having the fight, boom, he escapes, boom, they catch him. And I was like, what? Like, shouldn't that have been at least 10 minutes? And a little more explained. And I'm nitpicking. Because everything else, I love the Gladiator scenes. I love the point that gets to there. I love the backstory. I love he knows who he is. I love Joaquin Phoenix trying to get to something he can never possess. I love how Joaquin Phoenix tries to screw Russell Crowe to beat him in the arena and still doesn't do it. Everything works for me. Character gets redemption. He tells his story. We get Joaquin's story. The only problem I have is that one little nitpick, that little bit of thing, I want a little bit more story right there on what was going to happen a little bit more. Am I wrong?
Can I ask, what version of the movie did you see? Because there are several extended versions where I think they expand on that.
There's an extended director's cut, which does have more plot.
So would that fix my problem?
There are more scenes with the two senators, Gracchus and so forth, who are going to help him escape. And
I got that. I knew there might have been more. I didn't see the director's cut. Should I have seen the director's cut then? Would that explain
you
that part?
You don't necessarily have to. Obviously, you would benefit from it because you question that part of the film.
Am I wrong to question it, though?
No, there is more that was cut there for the sake of
Because usually Kevin will recommend to me, because usually you're more watching the extended versions, because I saw the extended version of Kong because of you, and it blew me away.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, so maybe I should watch this again one day.
Yeah,
but this movie's 5 stars for me. And there's no doubt about it, it won Best Picture that year.
And what's really wonderful about this movie is Russell Crowe deservedly won the Best Actor Oscar for this movie.
Absolutely.
And I know a lot of people at the time were like, really? You know, he got the Best Actor Oscar for a Sword and Sandal movie. And, you know, looking back, it is amazing. This movie could have been a disaster if they had not had such a strong actor in the lead. Like, Russell Crowe makes you believe that you are in ancient Rome, like, because a lot of the lines he has to say are the kind that if they're not delivered just right, could have been ridiculous. But they're not. And the fact that you buy the movie is in large part due to the fact that Russell Crowe is so incredible as Maximus.
Also, I think he has a great supporting cast, Maximus. I think Desmond, I always say his name, you know, the black guy.
Mm-hmm.
I can never say his name, right?
Demon
Hanzo, I think, does an excellent job. He's a very underrated actor.
Very.
He never gets full credit. When we review Major League and something like that, he's in Major League 1 and 2.
I don't think I knew that.
He is the voodoo guy. But I'm saying, we see this guy in movies forever, and he's so good. And the supporting cast is excellent. All the Roman soldiers can act.
Slaves. And also the actress, Connie Nielsen. I forget the character's name. I think Lucilla. She plays Commodus's sister and a former love interest of Maximus. She could, like, that's another crucial role that was carried off perfectly.
No, you're wrong about Jijima Hansu being in the Major League films.
Yeah, I am not wrong. I'll look it up and I need to be right now.
Wrong.
IMDb.
He's not him.
It's
so
not.
I'm
wrong.
Right,
I'm
wrong.
Looking, but we're looking it up.
I am wrong.
Yeah.
Wesley Snipes.
Oh,
I'm not getting confused with Wesley Snipes.
No, I know what you mean. Like Jobu.
Yeah, he's not Jobu.
That actor was the guy that played the president on 24.
Oh,
that's Blair Underwood.
No.
No, on 24.
That's
24.
That's,
oh, you're right. It's Dennis Prager. Dennis Hayward. You're right.
Yes.
I'm wrong. It's Dennis Hayward. Sorry.
Yeah.
So I thought it was that. You're right. You're right. I'm wrong. I'll support
right. Gladiator. Yes. Yeah. 100%. 5 stars. Great movie. 9 out of 10.
Oh.
Maybe has a point. Hold
I just
on.
Wanted to mention one little scene, which actually is one of the few scenes that Russell Crowe's not in, but it shows you how strong the movie is. It's the scene where Commodus confronts his sister about the fact that she's been helping Maximus. And I call it the Busy Little Bee speech. And it's been 10 years since I first saw this movie, and that still freaks me out.
I just wanted to comment. I saw a great exhibit of movie costumes where they had something that Russell Crowe wore as well as Joaquin Phoenix. And the detail on these costumes, which, I mean, you definitely see in the film, but to see it with your own eye, it was just phenomenal. From, like, the tiniest buckle on a sandal to the leather, I can't even begin to imagine sort of the idea of going into making something so detailed. Because as detailed as it looks on the screen, in front of you, it was like this three-dimensional piece of art.
Yes.
It was truly, truly phenomenal.
Well, the other interesting thing about this movie is that Russell Crowe came to the Gladiator set fresh off his role in The Insider, where he played Jeffrey Wigand, the tobacco industry whistleblower. So that is a role where he had to put on weight and he changed his hair. And so he comes in and they start filming the movie with the great northern battle scene, because because Russell Crowe needed the time to lose the weight and get into good enough shape so that he could survive the fighting
scene. And it's sort of interesting, like of all movies to come off of, one where he gained so much weight to, you know, like that, like dichotomy of that is really,
I mean, The Insider is a fantastic movie, and this is an incredibly strong movie. I mean, like, this is probably, like, the late 90s, early 2000s was probably as strong a run as of parts for an actor as anybody's ever seen. Like, Russell Crowe is just so faultless in movie after movie.
And then after Gladiator, he did A Beautiful Mind.
Another great movie.
Where he was also nominated for the Oscar, and I thought was very deserving of that one, and probably should have won. Simon.
Yeah, I just have something to say. We haven't discussed Ridley Scott's risk. Like, we need to give Ridley Scott credit. You cannot tell me those arena scenes could be done by anybody. Zack Snyder, I would have fallen asleep, I think, watching them.
The battle sequence at the beginning of the movie.
Yes.
They fight the Gauls or the Goths or whatever.
Amazing.
Yeah.
The way, and even when they shoot the scene with Russell Crowe, when they go to cut off his head, he gets on his knees and he stabs the guy. I mean, that was phenomenal battle scenes.
Yeah.
The arena scenes are amazing. Even the Gladiator School, all of it was good.
Oliver Reed? Last performance?
Yeah.
Phenomenal. Well, that's what I'm saying. I think we have to get more credit to other people. I mean, Ridley Scott's amazing. He's got fat nowadays. It pisses me off.
But the thing about Ridley Scott is that, with the possible exception of George Lucas, is there any major filmmaker in Hollywood more in love with recutting his movies? How many versions of Blade Runner are there? How many versions of Alien? You know,
that's a good point. Because there is at least 3 versions of Gladiator.
Cool.
Yeah, that was a good point, because I would say 3 versions at least of Gladiator.
And Gladiator is a relatively recent film as well.
Yeah, in the big scheme of things, yeah, absolutely.
I think it's just the 2.
I've seen 3 different ones.
There are several different versions of Alien floating around. That I know for certain.
Okay, that's great. We need to move on. Sorry, guys.
Oh, okay.
We're running a little late, so let's finish up our last
one. We're going to truncate the episode a little bit because we're running long. So
yeah.
We're going to finish up with a movie that... Oh, I you know, had to get on to episode 69.
Oh.
And that was a movie called Good Dick.
Is Dev seen it?
Good Dick.
Dev is not. That's Dev.
Directed by Mariana Palka, starring Mariana Palka, Jason Ritter, Eric Edelstein, Tom Arnold. Mark Webber, Martin Starr, Charles Durning, Bryce Dallas Howard. She was in this. Catherine Waterston, Elizabeth Waterston. Who has seen this movie? Hands up. All the men have seen Good Dick. You guys are not getting enough good. Sorry.
Kevin.
That's an awful
one. Thank you for not finishing that sentence.
Would you like to discuss this movie at
all? I found this movie on Netflix.
Why?
I don't know.
What possessed you to watch
this
movie?
Well, it had Jason Ritter in it, son of Jonah.
Do we like Jason Ritter? I'm still so undecided. I've watched 24 episodes. I got one episode left of the event. And I'm still like, you've not progressed from episode one to this. And I saw in Good Dick, I guess it was done before the event.
So, Mariana Polka is a shut-in. Basically, right?
Well, I'm not done discussing Jason
Ritter. No, Jason Ritter, whatever.
He's boring.
He's the son of a late actor who everybody loves, so he gets jobs.
Exactly, that's what I felt. Okay, Marianne Polk, does anybody know anything about
her? I've seen her before, but I don't know what else she's done.
Okay, she's a shut-in.
Yeah, and he, for some reason, latches onto her. He says she goes to the video store that he goes
to. He likes shredded, so it says that in the movie.
Yeah.
I know you saw it a while ago.
And he has no home. He lives in his car.
Yeah, he does.
So he tries to get into a relationship with her.
He does.
And what did you think of that, Bob?
What did I think of it? Well, I was just so depressed at not watching Gladiator. I thought I'd depress myself even further. With
now, what kind of movies does she watch?
What kind of movies does she watch?
Erotic.
I didn't see that part.
You didn't see the movie.
Did see the movie.
You had to know that part. That's the whole movie.
Right.
Is there her watching erotic?
Porn.
What? No, soft porn.
Right, soft porn. Right.
Well, she's a video store clerk that she rents it from, right?
Right.
Okay.
And he goes to her house, stalks her, to give her some movie for the store.
Right. Mm-hmm. She has a knife that she's holding behind her.
Yes, that's
right.
I saw this movie.
And she wants to know if he has, or just, I don't remember, how does the title come into it?
I can't remember.
He wants to know if he has a good dick, or she wants to know if he has a good dick.
Yes, that's what the movie's about, different kinds of dick. And she doesn't like the word dick.
Right.
She doesn't like lots of words concerning dick, and she doesn't like the smell of dick.
Right.
Some dicks smell bad.
Yeah.
And she doesn't want to have sex with him because that's not what she does. And she doesn't like his woody because that upsets her too, if he has wood.
Mm-hmm.
This movie is bizarre.
It's a bizarre movie. And it's about a person who does not relate well with other people learning how to deal with other people.
Absolutely. I mean, and you know what? She has redemption at the end.
Right.
But do we care?
She gets a job.
We have no interest that she has redemption. I couldn't care less. I just thought this movie was dull.
What I want to know is, how on earth would this movie have ever gotten pitched to a major studio?
It's an indie film.
Yes, but
it made $39,000 at the box office.
$39,000?
Yeah. I had to know more about this movie. After watching
39,000.
It made more than Motherhood.
I don't doubt it.
You
know what? It's the proof that they did.
So you're saying 39,000. Like, usually there's movies out there that make an extra zero at least on there.
No, $39,000.
I just want to know if I heard that.
And I try to figure out what theaters did this so I can call them and ask them never to show it again.
I'd like to know what the first screen average was.
Well, I think it probably... Kevin may able to speak more about this because I'm trying to find more information. Are there more independent theaters in the States?
An amount of money like $39,000, it opened in maybe a couple of theaters before it went to video. It probably will open in a couple of review houses, and that was about it.
But where are these review houses? In L.A.?
There are art films.
There's some here.
It could open in Canada Square, where they have art films that open.
Who goes to see these movies in Canada Square? Like people that don't go see Thor?
People who are into indie films who follow these kinds of things and might say, oh, I know Mariana Polk, and I'm going to go see her.
But I've never heard of her.
It just seems like it's a strange concept to hang a movie around. Like
Dick?
Well, no, but a shut-in who rents porn but can't stand any of the things that one would associate with porn.
Well, that's the whole thing in the movie, because at one point she goes, do you like this? And flips him over and tends to have sex with him, but with her clothes on. It was bizarre. Like, I can just, it sucks. Like, there's no point in watching this. Go read Gladiator.
Man, I would not recommend this movie.
No, you just like to torture me. Because you know I'll watch it.
Dragging me into your own personal hell.
All right. Well,
well said.
So, we had our ups and downs.
Yeah, I'd say so.
In episode 69.
We did.
I'm Kevin.
I'm Simon.
I'm Karen.
I'm Deb.
Bob intern.
Kermit the Frog!
And if they make it, I will eat Kermit.